bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone, and who is equally disposed toward all living entities. Let us offer our obeisances unto him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, certainly controls all living entities, so much so that the living entities have forgotten the aim of life. Na te vidu swarta gatim hi Vishnu. The living entities have forgotten that the aim of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. The external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. But that is Maya. In other words, it is a dream that is never to be fulfilled. Thus, every living being is illusioned by the external energy of the Supreme Lord. That illusory energy is undoubtedly very strong, but she is fully under the control of the transcendental person, who is described in this verse as Paresham, the transcendental Lord. The Lord is not a part of the material creation, but is beyond the creation. Therefore, not only does he control the conditioned souls through his external energy, but he also controls the external energy itself. Bhagavad Gita clearly says that the strong material energy controls everyone, and that getting out of her control is extremely difficult. That controlling energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and works under his control. The living entities, however, being subdued by the material energy, have forgotten the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nayasya kascha tititarati mayam yayajano muyati vedanaitam tam nirjitat matma gunam haresham namama bhuteshu samam charantam. Translation: no one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone and who is equally disposed toward all living entities. Let us offer our obeisances unto him. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Charubhya Stakrita Sindhubhya Vachapaditanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasthi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So the power of the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in a number of places in scripture. Here, Lord Brahma is speaking, and he is giving very clear description that actually, no one can overcome it. It bewilders everyone and makes them forget what is the goal of life. Therefore, they all go on different paths to different wrong destinations, in different wrong directions, all of them, some may be nicer destinations than others, apparently, but actually, they're all simply wrong destinations. And what is the point of that? What is the point? Srila Prabhupada has explained that, and Krishna himself has explained, that this material nature is like a prison house. It's like a prison house, therefore it's called Durga. Dur means very hard, and ga means to go. So it's like a prison house, very difficult to get out. But Srila Prabhupada has made the point that in a prison house, oftentimes there are different standards of imprisonment, the different standards of prisoners, of criminals. Some may be very bad, dangerous men. So even they may be dangerous to their fellow prisoners, so they have to be kept separate. And so they may be put in some solitary confinement, something of that sort. So this is very, for the very low class prisoner, very bad class. Others are in a more normal situation. They can mix with each other and receive. Some people may come and see them sometimes and something like that. Then you get others, Srila Prabhupada said, maybe in some cases like some political prisoners sometimes, or some special prisoners sometimes. They're in the jail, but their prison cell is more like some apartment, some middle-class apartment with furniture, and visitors may come anytime, and radio and television may be there, and so on and so forth. They may get the newspaper every day. So it's much better, at least, than what to speak of being in solitary confinement for some very dangerous criminal. But even your ordinary criminal, that standard of the, so to speak, high-class criminal is so much better. And the people in the solitary confinement, even the regular prisoners, if they're aware of what it is like in the high-class prison cell, they may hanker to go there. Even one man, Jai Satchinandan knows him very well, he's in prison, serving, I think, a life sentence there in Westville. He was telling us one time we went there that he really wanted to get a cell of his own. So he behaved very nicely, and they gave him a cell on his own, and he thought, very good. Of course, it was good he could put up an altar and so on. He's a devotee. But when you're in jail, you're in jail. And you cannot just come and go as you please. So high-class prisoner, low-class prisoner, they're all prisoners. They're all prisoners. So no one in that situation has anything to be proud of or truly happy about. They're all restricted. And they cannot live freely. So the material nature is like that. Everyone is heading in the wrong direction, going to the wrong destinations. But some of those destinations and some of the experiences that some of the people have may, in relative terms, be better than the situations and experiences of some of the others. Some may just suffer in the wilderness and achieve nothing. Others may have a pleasant journey and come to some nice place and live a luxurious life. So in relative terms, some people may say that one particular situation is much better than another and so on like this. But actually they're all the wrong place. They're all simply the wrong place. And that wrong place means that no matter how hard we try, we cannot achieve the happiness which we really want. In fact, the happiness which we really need if we are to become fully satisfied and not become agitated by some desire to move on and try to find something better. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvanau Loka Puna Arvarta Narajana Mamu Petya Tukunteya Punar Janma Na Vijite, that from the highest planet within this material world, from Brahmaloka down to the lowest planet, they're all places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. But Krishna says, one who surrenders to me never has to take birth again. So here Lord Brahma is speaking, and he knows, he must know, because Krishna has made that statement, Abrahma, from his planet, Brahmaloka. Even from there, what to speak of down to the lowest, where everything is truly shocking and ghastly in the hellish planets, in the lower species, and so on. But even on the level of Lord Brahma, there is not real happiness. So, of course, some Lord Brahmas, they go back to Godhead in some cases. But so many Lord Brahmas, after enjoying there, they fall down. And some of them even come to Chatsworth. Yes. We leave our position as Lord Brahma and we think, I prefer Unit 5. 501. With my friends there. Yes, anyway. Because we've all been Lord Brahma. We've all been Lord Brahma, but somehow our desires brought us here. Because of our desires, we left the position of Lord Brahma. And now we've come here. And of course, now we have the opportunity to go back to Godhead. But otherwise, who knows where we'd go from here? Who knows? Could be anywhere, but Srila Prabhupada has made the point, actually. Interesting point. Srila Prabhupada has made the point that now we are in the human form of life, we have the opportunity to becoming Krishna conscious, but Srila Prabhupada said one time that nowadays, in the world as we know it, the current situation, the current population, Srila Prabhupada made the point that if they do not take this opportunity of Krishna consciousness, current population, and become elevated in that way, then Prabhupada made the point that every single one of them is destined in their next life to take an animal birth at best. Yeah. Not so much that if I like Unit 5, 501 so much, maybe I'll come back and get a better house in Unit 5, or maybe I'll be elevated to Unit 6. But maybe you'll become a cockroach in one of those houses in Unit 5, or something. Yes. So Srila Prabhupada has made this point very clearly. That the destinations of the current population are, in all cases, bad, are going to be bad. Much lower situation, animal life, or even worse, if they don't get Krishna consciousness. So, it is not. Like in Bhagavad Gita, the point is made that if people die in the mode of passion and with material desires, and if they've been that sort of materially active person, then they're born again, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, they're born again in human society. But in our cases, or the cases of the current day people, Srila Prabhupada has made this point, that they're too degraded for that. Even though, of course, so many of them have some degree of passion, but the mode of ignorance is very strongly controlling them also. And so that means that in due course, the influence of the mode of ignorance will be the main factor which will determine where they go. Not that they're in that type of situation and passion where they may be born again as materially active people. No. They'll be born as passionate animals, or just plain tamasic animals, or plants who are all tamasic insects, and so on. Yeah, so this is the nature of the material world. It's so powerful. And even Lord Brahma, his position is not guaranteed. Unless he's very attentive and very careful to avoid the pitfalls which are there, even for someone like him. And what to speak of him, everyone else, generally, they are on the wrong path to the wrong destination. They will achieve the wrong goal, and this is all futility, actually. Yeah, so this material nature, if one is on the material platform, it is not a matter of if the material nature will misdirect me, foil my attempts to be happy, smash me from time to time with severe sufferings, keep me in great ignorance. It is not a question of if these things will occur. It is just a question of to what degree or in what ways and how often, or these types of considerations, that's all. It is not a question of maybe I'll very cleverly make arrangements so that I actually become successful and enjoy in material life and my future will simply be very nice. No, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So therefore, Lord Brahma is making this statement here that no one can overcome the Supreme Lord's illusory potency Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone. Everyone. Making one lose the sense. One loses one's good sense. And in that way, cannot understand the aim of life and adopt some other aim, and in this way goes off to that wrong future. So Lord Brahma himself, who is such a great personality, he is making the statement very clearly. And of course, we know that he knows. Through his own experience, he knows. Yes, he is speaking from experience here. He is not just philosophizing about some other thing to do with some other persons. No, he has had experience. Even though he is the greatest of all the living entities within the material world, and even though he has such great opportunity to be Krishna conscious and have all good facility for achieving the actual goal of life, that he has had personal experience how even if you're such a big person, that if you make some wrong step, if you make some wrong choices, if you allow some wrong desire to take root in your heart and then dictate to you, and then you start following that desire, then even if you are Lord Brahma himself, and even if you're a devotee in many ways, but the material nature is so stringent and all-encompassing, not just capable, but every time taking whatever advantage the conditioned souls will give her, never missing an opportunity, if there is one, to drag someone down. So Maya Devi is like that, and Lord Brahma has had that experience. He's had that experience that it's described earlier on in Srimad Bhagavatam, how somehow he became attracted to his own daughter, chased after her until some of his sons came, and not very diplomatically, because they're his sons, they told him, you know, this doesn't seem such a good thing to do, and he managed to get the idea. And then later, of course, what a mistake. Later, Krishna himself was present, but Lord Brahma became somehow puffed up. He's such a big person. Here's this little boy, Krishna, just wandering around in just a dhoti, not even a kurta, and playing around with his friends, getting involved in little disputes with his friends sometimes, and his friends sometimes, they chastise him. What sort of big person do you think you are? So Lord Brahma, he also thought, yeah, what sort of person is this? This little boy, Krishna. He thinks he's got a little mystical power. He killed a few little demons, or maybe they just happened to have heart attacks when at some crucial time or something. I don't know. Just like this government here in this country, I don't know if they still maintain the view, but they actually thought that there was no connection between a person becoming HIV positive and actually getting AIDS. Just as some people argue that it is only coincidental that the vast majority of people who get lung cancer are people who smoke cigarettes, and therefore smoking cigarettes is fine. Anyway, that's another thing. Well, it's sort of the same thing. But Lord Brahma, somehow he underestimated Krishna. Krishna had been killing demons from the time he was 3 months old. He killed Putana, and she was, 12 miles tall. She was a monster, and he was a little 3-month-old child, but he killed her. And every day he's killing so many demons, including big demons, that sometimes the other demigods are afraid of. But Lord Brahma, under the influence of the material nature, he thought, what sort of mystical power does this boy have? I'll show him some real mystical power. So he stole the cowherd boys and calves and came back momentarily, wanting to have a good laugh. Let us see now this little cowherd boy, see what sort of panic he's got into now. And then we will laugh. And then who knows what, perhaps he was then going to bring them back. But that was his idea. I'll show him what real mystical power is. So then he came, and he saw the cowherd boys and calves were still there. But still it didn't register, although suddenly some anxiety set in, and he went back to that place where he was keeping them, and saw they were there also. So by now he was certainly quite perplexed. So then he came back to Vrindavan, and there they were again, and there was Krishna. Suddenly all those cowherd boys and calves manifested, well, the cowherd boys at least manifested four-armed Vishnu forms. And then he realized, oops, sorry, mistake. So what a crushing experience that must have been. What a crushing experience. I think we've all had our overinflated bubble of false ego popped from time to time, and we know how it feels. Pride comes before a fall, and the bigger the pride, the bigger the fall, and the harder it hurts, the more it hurts. So Lord Brahma, he had to swallow his pride and understand what an offensive rascal I was, and somehow digest that and come and just throw himself at the lotus feet of Krishna. And he was crying in regret that I was so foolish, even though I'm not meant to be like that. And I was so offensive, even though I should never have been like that at all. I know so much better, but somehow it happened. So he came and Krishna just sort of looked down his nose at him and just went like, something like that, that you can go. Yeah, so, even Lord Brahma, he knows, by his own experience, how this is true, what this verse is saying. And he is the greatest. He is the greatest of all living entities. Now, he is controlling this entire universe. And we are hardly able to control anything, whatever it may be, which is supposedly under our control. Our ability to do that is very limited. Be it control a country, control a family, control some business operation, just control one's position in some menial job. Even just to control one's senses. So difficult when people are on the material platform. So what to speak of Lord Brahma if he manifests that somehow the disqualification which gives Maya Devi the opportunity to grab hold. What to speak of Lord Brahma, his position becoming compromised, even severely, when Maya gets a hold. But what about us? What about us? So we should learn from Lord Brahma. We should learn from what he's saying here, and we should learn from our own experiences. We surely have had sufficient experience. Perhaps even every day we're having some experience, or at least from time to time, that if I stick at the lotus feet of Krishna, then I am safe. Even though I'm very small, I'm not a big person like Lord Brahma, but Krishna is very big. So even though this material energy is insurmountable by my standards, by my own independent efforts, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita the same thing in principle. This divine energy, this material energy is so difficult to overcome. But mame vie prapadyante maya metam tarantite. You surrender to me, you can easily cross beyond it. So the devotees know that there's no point in taking on the material nature. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada even, he quoted this little sort of slogan that when you take Krishna consciousness, you are declaring war on Maya. You may have seen the t-shirt. War on Maya. So what does that mean? Does that mean that there you are, shaping up against Maya? All right, here, come on, I'm ready. Here I come, ready or not, Maya. Watch out. With just a little flick of her finger, everything will be devastated 1,000 times over. If we try like that. Material energy becomes easily overcome. Krishna says that by my mercy, one can easily cross beyond it. That great ocean of the material nature, which generally on the material level is just practically infinite, or if not infinite, at least it is far, far beyond our capacity to cross it by our own strength. But by the mercy of Krishna, if we take to the process of devotional service and get his shelter and protection, then that practically almost unlimited ocean of trials and tribulations in material life, it becomes shrunk to the amount of water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. So that is nothing. Or if not nothing, but at least it's very insignificant for any human being. You just step across. There's no feeling of any discomfort or anything at all. It's just taken in one stride, practically automatically. So that's what it's like. Because that material nature, even though it's so powerful, but Krishna is more powerful. And that material energy, that is his material energy. So Prabhupada, the way Prabhupada puts it here is a little interesting. The prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu certainly controls all living entities. So his prowess is manifested through the material nature. But when you have that prowess on your side, when you're under the material nature, then you're, that prowess is subjugating you. But when that prowess is on your side, then that material nature, it becomes easy to deal with. And for the pure devotees, it doesn't matter. If I'm in the spiritual world with Krishna, if I'm in the material world serving Krishna, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. The great exalted devotees, they don't care. Will I be in Goloka Vrindavan? Will I be on the planet Earth? Will I even be in the hellish planets? For them it makes no difference. They are free always, under all circumstances. They're happy always, because they're with Krishna always. And material world, spiritual world, it doesn't make any difference. It's all the same. It's all transcendental and completely transcendentally wonderful. So this is the nature of devotional service. This is the effect of devotional service. So we should all take to, or at least be fully absorbed, fully engaged in devotional service. An intelligent devotee is the type of devotee who knows, who has actually come to the point of being convinced once and for all, that there is actually no future for me in material life of any form, of any type. So therefore I don't need to maintain any little vestige of hope somewhere in the back of my mind that somehow, sometimes, if life in Krishna consciousness somehow becomes difficult one day, and now I'm struggling and having difficulty keeping a proper grip, then that little thought that is hiding in the back of my mind normally, suddenly it leaps to the front and says, here I am. You know, maybe you can make it in material life if you do this. And then you may think, ah, perhaps I should take a chance. But no, an intelligent person, an intelligent devotee, a devotee will only really become steady and actually fixed in Krishna consciousness when the devotee develops, or to the degree that the devotee develops, that realization that through Krishna consciousness everything is very nice, and without Krishna consciousness everything is very bad and we will not deal with any of it at all. Yes. So, this is an intelligent devotee. Will not fall for the tricks of material nature. One devotee, actually Bhadri Narayan Prabhu, this very great soul, told me a very sort of interesting joke. He said that one devotee had just passed stool and he turned to the stool and said, oh, look at you, you're so nasty. Blah. Then the stool spoke to him and said, don't say that. A little while ago I was a nice samosa. Yes. So the tricks of material nature. The tricks of material nature. She's very clever. So Prabodhananda Saraswati, he makes a reference sort of in that connection. He says, when I think of how the material nature has got all these different people in all these different ways, but so completely in every case, it's just incomprehensible how it could be done. Practically unlimited numbers of living entities, and in practically unlimited ways, and so completely.
Which might sort of get your dormant God consciousness going again. The most potent, the most effective type of influence which will affect you in the strongest way is if you hear spiritual sound. This is why Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, they stressed this going out into public and chanting. And even Srila Prabhupada, this is now in the 70s, Srila Prabhupada, he was told about that sometimes when we go out chanting in the streets, sometimes you get these people and they put their fingers in their ears, like a madidat. And when Prabhupada heard that, he was surprised. He said, really? They do that? And Prabhupada said, well, you must run over to them and pull their fingers out of their ears and then chant very loudly into their ears. Of course, if it was someone like Amadidat before he had his stroke, you'd probably have to have your running shoes on, because he might retaliate a little bit. But it is said that there is a direct channel from the ear to the heart. Meaning, you know, to your being, to you, on your deepest level. Of course, there are connections between all of your senses. And, you know, all the information, all the sort of things that you're exposed to, it all comes to you, to your heart, eventually, or to some degree. But of all the things things you may see, smell, taste, touch, hear, and so on like that. Of all these influences, things which affect you and affect your thinking and the way you are, the person you are, of all those things, the thing which affects you the most is what you hear. Prabhupada gave an example to illustrate the principle involved, that the example is that we're, from the spiritual point of view, the people in general, worldly people, from the spiritual point of view, it's like they're sleeping. It's like they're spiritually asleep. Materially, they may be wide awake and running around here and there and fully functional. But from the spiritual point of view, we say they're asleep. They're completely dead to the world, spiritually. Now, if a person is actually asleep, meaning materially, just in very ordinary terms, a person is sleeping, and you want to wake them up. So how can you do that? Well, of course, if you're right next to them, you can shake them or shout at them or something like that. But what if you are some distance away from them? Then you can't wake them up by anything to do with the sense of touch, because you're some distance away. Nothing to do with the sense of smell. Somehow maybe you burn some nice incense, that's not going to wake them up. Or maybe you bring in some rubbish, something that smells bad, that's not going to wake them up. And they can't see anything because they're asleep. And obviously they can't taste anything. So if someone is asleep, the best way to wake them up is through sound. If you make a noise, then the person may wake up. Even if you're 20 yards away, if you make a noise, they'll wake up. So we are, so to speak, or the people in general, are spiritually sleeping. So if we want to wake them up spiritually, the most effective thing is spiritual sound. Yes, this is very important. And we see, that when people are exposed to spiritual sound, then, in many cases at least, they become spiritually aroused. Getting back to George Harrison, another little story. Well, he mentioned himself on a number of occasions how he, on a number of occasions, and with John Lennon on some occasions, somehow they got into chanting. He said, one day he was driving from France to Portugal, and he was on his own that time. He just started chanting Hare Krishna. He didn't really know where he was going. I mean, he wasn't following a map or anything. He was just driving and chanting. And he drove and chanted for like about 9 or 10 or 12 hours or something. And he didn't know where he was going, but he ended up in Portugal at the right place. There's another time he told me, he and John Lennon chanted for 23 hours, non-stop. They were on a cruise in the Mediterranean. And one morning they got up early, about 5 in the morning, out on this luxury yacht in the Mediterranean. And they just started playing their guitars and singing Hare Krishna. And they just carried on. And before they knew it, it was 3 o'clock the next morning. Yeah. So, discussing this, it was the end of 1979, and And George was saying that, and he had many experiences like that, of just chanting and chanting and chanting. And it was just this amazing experience on many occasions. So he was saying to me, we were talking about, he was saying that this shows its spiritual sound. It's not just material sound. So I said to him, yes. What do you think it would have been like if you sang, now again, you might not be up on the history, but the Beatles had one of their biggest songs. It was called, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Did you ever hear of that? Probably, if you missed it, you probably didn't, you know, it doesn't matter that much. It was a bit of a silly song, to tell you the truth. So, I said to him, what would it be like if you sang, I want to hold your hand for 23 hours? George just looked at me, sort of like, wow. And then he laughed and said, well, I think it would have been a hard day's night. He was very funny. Yeah. All right. So how do we bring someone back to spirituality? Give them the opportunity to hear about Krishna. That will reawaken their dormant God consciousness. And we see it happen. And the fact that it happens, this is an interesting point. Think about this. The fact that it happens is an indication that it is natural. If it was not natural, it could not really happen. Now, this is a slightly esoteric point, but it's an important point. Things cannot happen. I mean, in the sense that you cannot get into something yourself if you do not have some, at least some, innate capacity within you for that. Yes. Just like swimming. We are not fish. So to swim for us is not as natural as it is for the fish. But to some degree it's there within us. So we can swim. If we try, we can swim, generally. Because there is some, at least, innate tendency within us. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in talking about this point, how the fact that when people hear about Krishna consciousness, many of them become Krishna conscious. They get into it, even though they weren't intending to. But they just find they just get into it. So Prabhupada explained that this is indicating that this is an innate tendency that the living entity has within himself or herself, the innate natural tendency as part of our being to become God conscious. Yes. And Srila Prabhupada said, just like a child can walk, or any child can learn how to walk. Now, we've all been children. We all learned how to walk. Generally, every child, unless they're physically handicapped or, you know, some sort of rare case like that, every child, by the time they get to, you know, whatever it is, 1 year old or something, they start walking, isn't it? That's just life. It is not that some do and some don't. You know, not all children grow up to become doctors, but every child grows up to walk, barring a few rare exceptions. So from that we can deduce that the capacity to walk is an innate part of human nature. How does that sound? It is just a natural part of the human condition. As much as having two arms and two legs and, you know, a form, basically something along these lines, it's all just part of the human condition, and that's all there is to it. So similarly, to walk is a natural part of the human condition. And if you are a human, you walk. So Prabhupada gave that example. So you become Krishna conscious, it indicates it's a natural part of you. Otherwise, how could you do it? If it was actually something totally unnatural. So then Srila Prabhupada gave the example of flying. We can all walk. How many of us can fly? I mean, not that you have a pilot's license or you can fly in an airplane. How many of you can fly? Come on. Out of 100 of you, perhaps, do we have 1%? Out of, you know, a few thousand people in the festival, do we have 0.1% or 0.01%? In the whole of Durban, South Africa, the planet Earth, do we have 1 person who can fly? We don't. We don't have 1. And why is that? Because it is not part of the human condition. And you can try your best. Now you can try. I got my driving license. My mother taught me to drive when I was 13. I got my driving license when I was 15. If I had practiced flying from the time I was 13 until now, I'm going on 51. Do you think, you know, I could fly any further now after 37 years of practice? Do you think I would fly any further than I did on the first day? No. This is a very simple little example, but it's a very important point. To fly is not part of the human condition. Therefore, even if you practice like mad, you'll never fly. You'll never fly. But every child learns to walk and talk and so on and so forth. So, when people become exposed to bad consciousness, particularly in the form of hearing spiritual sound vibration, it reawakens that dormant, already existent, but currently covered over, love of God, relationship with God, which is already there. It wakens it. And therefore we find people become God conscious. Yes, because it is part of the essential nature of every living entity, spiritually. Yeah. So therefore, we should give everyone the opportunity to hear about Krishna. Right, let's see. I am confused as to how I should bring up my child in terms of food. He has just started eating solids. I want to know. Oh, I see. If I allow him to be vegetarian, is that going to be nutritional enough? Well, that's a good question. Important question. Yes, sometimes, maybe not now, but going back 20, 30 years, there were many people who thought that if you're a vegetarian, you're sort of doomed to become some sort of skinny beanpole person, you know, a stick figure, a living stick figure, and, you know, to be very pale and insipid and very weak and so on, if you're vegetarian. But it's not true. We know that the most powerful animals living on land are strict vegetarians. Did you know that? Yeah. The elephant is a strict vegetarian. If you offer them meat, they won't accept it. Bulls are vegetarians. Don't try taking on either, okay? My gosh. Yeah. You know, we have still in India the Padyatra devotees, a group of devotees just walking all around India, stopping at a different town every night, having a little festival, and just moving around like that. It's called Padyatra, a walking festival. And they used to keep an elephant with them, and the elephant would lead the procession. Indian elephants are somewhat more gentle than African elephants, and they're smaller. So this elephant, he got attached to walking at the head of the procession all over India. So one time, the devotees came to some town, and there were a lot of devotees living in that town. So the devotees in the town came out with a big Harinam party, chanting Hare Krishna, to meet our devotees as they were walking in with the elephant, and, you know, it was a whole big procession. So this Harinam party, they were all very happy, and everyone was very happy, and they are now proceeding into the town. So one of the little Harinam party members, he made a mistake. He got in front of the elephant for a minute or so, and the elephant was sort of looking at him, you know, and in elephant language was saying, "Listen, my friend, I lead the processions here, okay?" But this gentleman, unfortunately, didn't get the message. So, you know, the elephant picked him up in his trunk, threw him on the ground, and trod on him. And that was the end of that little gentleman. How did we get onto that? What was the question? Oh, vegetarian, okay. Oh, yes, being strong. I can give you another example. Sorry if that was a little gory. Srila Prabhupada was in Bombay one time, and one devotee named Brahmananda was there. He was an ex-New York State heavyweight wrestling champion. In other words, he was a big man, Brahmananda, and he's an even bigger man now. So, one day one man came to talk with Prabhupada. This man was an Indian, but he was an anti-vegetarian activist. He's trying to promote meat eating in India. Really, he's got this thing where you've got to eat meat, otherwise you just won't make it. So he was telling Prabhupada, you must eat meat, otherwise you won't get enough vitamins or whatever, proteins, so on and so forth. And he himself was not a big person, just sort of average build. So Srila Prabhupada was not really appreciating what he was saying, of course. Srila Prabhupada pointed to Brahmananda. Brahmananda was about three times the size of Namacharya, three times the size of any of you, really. Prabhupada pointed to him, Brahmananda, and said to this meat-eating campaigner, he said, "You see this man? He is a vegetarian. He can kill you with one hand." sir. The gentleman, I think, became silent after that. Didn't want to try it out. So, you know, if you have a balanced vegetarian diet, it'll be very good for you. There is a myth propagated by the meat producing companies that if you don't eat meat, you won't get enough, whatever it may be, and then you'll end up in some very sort of pathetic condition. But this is a myth. This is a myth. It is a fairy tale. It's actually not true at all. So please, bring your child up as a vegetarian. Be a vegetarian yourself. And if you do it properly, it'll be very nice. It'll be very good for your health. Be very good all round.